Hi everybody. Just a quick announcement before the episode begins. Well, more of an apology actually. So Megan, me, forgot to connect the correct microphone for the recording of this session and the next couple of sessions. So the audio quality for my section is a bit crap, and I do apologize for that. You can still hear it, and Mabel and Chris are fine, but it's just not quite up to our usual standard. So apologies in advance for that. Thanks. Enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where three Australians talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode by episode.
I'm Chris.
I'm Mabel.
And I'm Megan. And today we are discussing season 3, episode 2, Dead Man's Party.
Thoughts?
Yeah.
Well, Chris finally got the previously on Buffy that he could have used at the start of season.
Yeah. Right?
I was watching, I was like, oh, Chris can remember this now.
So, well,
it's very useful.
So Buffy struggles with life back in Sunnydale. Her problems with Angel combined with the anger and distance of her friends and mother only make things more difficult. However, everyone is eventually brought back together when a Nigerian mask that Joyce has acquired causes an army of zombies to rise up all over Sunnydale. That's a pretty good synopsis, actually.
Yeah. I half noticed this last episode. Are we not talking about the director and writer anymore?
Oh, shit. Yes, I forgot to do it. I actually did have it.
All the names that I forget and remember and forget and remember.
Last week was actually written and directed by Joss Whedon.
There you go.
I had that written down. Yeah. I forgot to say so. But this week, written by our favourite, Marty Noxon. You remember Marty Noxon, right?
I'm your Marty.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
And directed by James Whitmore Jr. What a very...
That's a new name.
That's a very, like, sort of like a presidential name. James.
Well, anytime you add a junior or a senior or like a the third to the end of something, you know, it ups the class.
It's like when I got a rat and I called it Spike Wesley Pincus the third. Not because it was the third rat that I had, but just because I thought it sounded more regal.
Is it Spike after Spike?
Yes, because it was an albino rat, so it was.
Like,
that is so good.
Wesley is a character yet to be introduced in the Buffy universe.
Huh.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's this season, isn't it?
This season you will get to see a character called Wesley.
Well, actually, it's a good thing that I was thinking. It's a kind of a good thing Chris isn't watching on the DVDs, because the DVD menu for Disc 1 Season 3 is like a major spoiler character wise.
Oh, serious?
Yeah.
As in, like, the character that we might be seeing very soon?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I was like, because first I was watching the DVD menu and I was like, oh, yes. But then I was like, wait, we haven't seen that person. And good thing Chris isn't seeing that person.
I'm enjoying watching Chris's face while we have this discussion.
Who? What do you mean?
Anyway, back to the episode.
Honestly, it's really tempting to like drop, like, I could put the name in a sentence, you know, because it'd be really easy to like, but yeah. I'm not. It would ruin it.
You could potentially do that at some point throughout this episode without ever drawing attention to it, and I'll know. And people who listen to this podcast will know. But Chris will know.
No.
Satisfying.
This is upsetting.
So moving back to the episode, have we had a previously on before? I can't recall.
I think we have.
Little ones. I think there's been little ones. Never one this long before.
Yeah, this one really gave you the like.
Yeah.
Happened at the end of.
But really, I really could have used this last episode. Is that? Was, come on.
No, episode but I think it was nice how it didn't. Like, obviously, you were lost, but the whole point is that the episode kind of stands alone. Like, it was Anne, it was Buffy. She was like, you didn't need to know where she, because she was no one. So it kind of like made you look at her.
And in a way,
you didn't need the backstory to watch it.
It gave you this sense of confusion, right? Which is almost like
certainly did.
What she is feeling and what everyone is going through at that moment is kind of a form of confusion and frustration.
And, like, who is she and, like, what has she gone through? You don't know. Anyway, we could have talked about this last episode. But let's get back to this one.
So we open on Buffy unpacking. and Joyce hanging her Nigerian mask.
God, like, right off the bat. Yeah. Come on. I think this entire episode is just a bit much, you know? It's just a lot of everything.
Yeah.
It's a bit heavy. A bit heavy, a you know? You feel a bit bloated afterwards after watching.
Yeah. It's like after you've been to Sizzler and you have to unbutton the top button of your jeans.
Oh, yeah. I feel like it's sort of more of a discovery I made halfway through the episode, but I think Joyce is a sometimes food. Like, when she's sprinkled in there, she is great. But when, like, the entire episode revolves around her, it's just, like, too much. It's just, like, you just get more and more annoyed.
What is it that you get frustrated with Joyce? I mean, I agree. She's particularly annoying in this episode. And her fucking, we'll get to her, but, Pat.
Oh, fucking Pat. But, you know, I think especially, like, because you and I, Megan, we've, like, seen all the seasons. And so we've seen more of Joyce. Like, definitely in the first couple of seasons, she's not in it as much. And then we kind of commented, I think, in last season how, like, she, I don't know, she has her, like, mum position. But I think in this episode, it's her first kind of, like, being an active character. And I think it is a lot when she's been no one beforehand. Like, she's been the... not anonymous, but she's been like the sticking mother figure that puts a motherly word in every now and then.
Hasn't really had a strong character. She's basically been the plot device when needed, and so
exactly, she doesn't really have like a personality.
She just adds pressure when needed.
Yeah.
Just annoying.
So this was the first episode. Yeah.
But I did. Yes, I did. Maybe I'll save this for my. Oh my gosh, there's too many good quotes.
Oh my god.
I feel like I know which quote you're talking about.
It's angry at the room, Mum. It wants the room to suffer. Sorry. Help it.
I could quote lines for this whole thing.
I mean, it's classic Marty Noxon, right? Like, I feel like Marty Noxon has this incredible ability to write really shit episodes with really great one-liners. Like, she's had some good episodes, but she's had some really crap episodes too, if you recall from season two.
It does kind of redeem it, I think, because I think even in the past when we've watched some of, like, the shittier Marty Noxon episodes, the great lines throughout do make you feel better as a result. You know, you end the episode being like, you know what, I still kind of feel happy about the funny lines that happened.
I laughed out loud so often throughout this episode, despite the fact that I was super annoyed at it the entire time.
Yeah. It was pretty annoying. Yeah, I think so. Starting from here,
yeah.
Was anyone else getting annoyed by, like, the ongoing trend of just, like, the sad music in every scene? I remember when we finally get to, like, the first ominous music scene, I was like, thank fuck. Like, I was like, I am so sick of this Debbie Downer Buffy sad track in the background. I need some intense ominous music. And I was so fucking glad.
It's not even just the music, just like the whole episode. It's just like sad, melodramatic, and no one's happy. And like,
no one's talking to each other. It's just very, it's lame.
I guess you do need this episode because, like, Angel just died and, like, Buffy ran away. You kind of need this bridge, but I hope it is a bridge. And I hope we're on the other side next episode.
I was thinking that, but I think the only one that I enjoyed it with really was Giles. Everyone else kind of annoyed me, but I really enjoyed seeing Giles have his.
Yes.
I think that's a recurring theme. I noticed that a lot. Maybe it's just because he's a better actor, or I don't know what it is, but he carries those moments so much better than anyone else.
Definitely.
I mean, there's a lot in those moments for him, but because of his relationship with Buffy. But equally, I just think overall in this episode, I think one of the things that really annoys me is that it just feels like all of the characters are acting out of character. You know,
well, that's what I think. Aside from
bond to this whole moment, the way that they do, you know,
from Giles, everyone is very like teen angst, like all their, and I think that's why it's hard for all their dial, everything they say is also just, really whiny,
even Joyce,
the Buffy Willow moment when we get to it, where they finally confront each other, but I just feel like. They wouldn't have had to have gone through what they went through first. Like, remember at the beginning of last season when Buffy had, you know, had questioned whether her friends would still love her because of everything that happened with the Master, you know, and she was acting out, you know, when she was bad. And she was acting out, and she was like, she says to Giles, oh, my friends are going to be so mad at me for, you know, acting out and being such a dick. And he's like, I think you might find that they surprise you. And she walks in and they just accept her back, and they, you know, acknowledge that she's been through a really tough time and just go back to normal, right? Whereas in this episode, they're all a bunch of whiny fuckheads who treat her like shit the entire time. And it's just like, dudes, seriously, you know that she's going through shit. What the fuck?
Yeah, it felt like they are better friends than that. That's what, it was all really annoying to watch, because it's like, you, they wouldn't do this, you know. Yeah. Anyway.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, Buffy decides to head out, and she walks the streets wearing what? What is that outfit? Would a 16-year-old wear that outfit? Come on. Those hideous blue pants with those hideous pockets, that hideous cardigan. I just can't. Cannot with this outfit.
All her outfits in this episode are a little questionable.
They're like the 40-year-old outfits.
Like, oh, I don't like anything she wears in this episode. Like, first there was her in, like, the dream sequence, but then her at the dinner party. I was like, what?
Pink dress.
Oh, the pink dress. Whoa.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the costumes?
I did not notice a single one.
Excellent. Perfect. So as you shouldn't.
Speaking of wardrobe, though, so in this scene where she's like going in the alley and trying to find her friends and blah, and she's like going after this mysterious dark figure.
Yes.
Oh my God, it's Xander. Yay. Yep. Is anyone else noticing, like, the? I assume this is done so that he is not recognized, like, this could be a vampire or something. But anyone has the, like, huge popped collar?
Yeah,
that he's wearing on his coat that makes him look like a Dracula wannabe or something. Yeah, like, it's that. Why is he doing that? Is that part of his Nighthawk thing? Because it's,
I guess, stupid. So. I guess that's his, so, like, stupid. I'm in character as a Slayer today.
It's a huge popped collar. Like, the lapels on that thing are enormous.
Yeah.
Is it safe for Giles to be sending the Scooby Gang
without
Buffy?
No.
Yeah.
No.
That's really a no-no, right?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. If anything, and I think he's tried in the past, like, if anything, I would have thought Giles would be the one that would be going out.
Yeah. Right.
He's got the weapons, the training, like.
I mean,
perhaps,
perhaps they just insisted and he kind of, you know, ceded to them eventually, but, yeah, it feels odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do really love that the Scoobies really haven't gotten any better at slaying vampires this week.
They got 6 out of 10 vampires. What are you talking about?
Yeah. But they do not look to be a well-oiled machine when Buffy comes across them in the dark alley.
Do the walkie-talkies help them that much? I don't know.
I wouldn't have thought so. I think it was just
the code names. I mean, who are they hiding their identity from?
I mean, honestly. Anyway, head to the credits. Now, Chris, I'm curious, did you notice someone in the credits that would have been there last week too, and I just didn't notice it last week, but that you feel shouldn't be in the credits at the moment?
Oh. Yeah. You know what? Actually, I didn't bring this up. I think, I don't know why I didn't bring this up, but Angel, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sort of insinuating that even though he's dead, he's going to come back at some point.
And he appeared in her dreams as well, you know, like.
All he's doing.
I guess it's that.
He's just going to appear in her dreams for the rest of the season, frankly. I mean, that's going so well. So
that's how Buffy evolves. You know, she just has, we just get a lot more dream scenes, and Angel's now just like her happy, friendly, like, dream ghost that gives her advice.
Dream.
They are the worst scenes of every episode, so I hope they don't carry on too long.
It's so bad this episode, like.
It's so, like, you can just feel the dreaminess of it, you know, the lighting, the music, the way they move.
It's awful. It adds nothing. So anyway, the Scooby Gang heads to Giles' house, and Buffy's too chicken to knock on the door, which is very cute. And then the door opens and we get the sad music again, but this time it totally works because Giles.
Oh, Giles. Welcome home, Buffy.
Just when he was talking about becoming a looker or a seer, he's back to being a watcher. Yeah, see how I snuck that one in there? Do you like it?
So sneaky. So sneaky.
We're starting a counter. That's two.
I'm not even going to pretend that it's not going to get up fast. because then also... Also, Giles is like, Bobby's like, I went and saw my mom first, and Giles is like, how did you find her?
Oh, yeah.
the address. I had a proper laugh out loud moment at that one.
Oh my god. That's three.
That's three.
Yeah. Three strikes, you're out, man.
Oh, and then Giles having his little moment while he's making the tea.
Yeah, looks like a pretty good like tea spread.
Yeah, but I just love that moment. I feel like it's one of those beautiful moments, and this is a testament, I think, to him as an actor, Anthony Stewart Head, that he really just does capture everything that needs to be said in that moment without saying a word, and it's beautiful. I love it. Yeah, it's a good scene.
Yeah, he does it really well.
Yes.
Does he, because I feel like I said this about a line he had last episode as well, but have I just forgotten, or are they upping the British on him again? Like, did he seem more British in this episode, or has he always been like this?
No, I think he kind of just goes in and out of it, but he definitely has had moments as British as this before.
Yeah. Yeah. There were just like a lot of his classic Giles British lines in this episode.
I don't know why that's so funny. Just like, he's like talking to the director. Okay, where's the British at today? 7? 8? We need a 2 on the British here, actually.
Yeah. Let's take it to a 10 today, Anthony.
Spike's just living at 15 every day.
Oh, no. So we end the scene with Buffy and Willow making awkward plans for the next day. That seems like it's going to turn out well. And then we head to a great moment. Welcome back, Principal Snyder. It is.
Snyder is on fire.
Oh, I love this guy. I love this guy. He is just so, he is perfectly named. He is so snide. Like,
yep.
Just love it.
Yeah.
It's so like.
He kills it in this scene.
The fact that Buffy is expelled and he is not having her back. It's so good.
You know how like for Oscar nominations, actors send in their favorite scene from the movie?
Yeah.
You have to pick a scene. That's Snyder's scene, I reckon. That's what he submitted to the Emmys.
Also, I did not know that was a thing. Does the actor submit their favorite scene?
Oh, it's the studio and the actor, and everyone decides like what scene to send in. Yeah, because like it's like people don't, they can't really expect everyone to watch every movie, so they just like they pick a scene for every actor, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
So after determining that Buffy's not going back to school anytime soon, Joyce drops her off for her date with Willow, and she gets stood up.
Right? Like, Willow, like, the way, it would never happen like that. Like, her talking at Giles' place, being like, oh, do people want to hang out? And Xander's like, nah, I can't. I've got plans with court. Like, ugh. And then Willow's like, oh, I'll move things around. And then just stands her up? Like,
sorry, no. But no. I just don't see this happening.
Not my Willow.
Not your Willow. Exactly.
Do you like how we're getting a new location in Sunnydale, though? Like,
this is the first time we've seen this location, the espresso pump. Yeah,
season 3.
Exciting.
We're up in the budget.
Yeah, straight up.
Yeah.
You don't need to have coffee at the Bronze anymore.
Oh yeah, that's true.
They're like, we can't milk this whole coffee bar thing anymore. We're gonna have that as the bar and this is the coffee shop. This makes much more sense.
Good stuff. That's good stuff. So she heads home after being stood up by Willow, and she bumps into this week's I love how on Zoom, if we yell too loudly, the microphones just cut out.
Yep.
To adjust the volume.
I'm also thinking about like what my housemate can hear. Like I'm just screaming alone in a room with headphones in.
Yeah.
That's great. One-sided conversations.
Yeah.
So this week,
the minor character, it's her.
Woohoo!
Pat, the really peppy, friendly confidant of Joyce Summers, the worst, played by Nancy Lenihan. Now, you might recognize Nancy Lenihan because she has been a heck ton of stuff. So, in recent years, she had an ongoing role in the TV series Veep with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Was also in her previous show, New Adventures of Old Christine, if you recall that one.
Must be mates with Julia.
I feel like she must be. And she was in My Name is Earl. She was in How I Met Your Mother. She was in Pleasantville, Catch Me If You Can.
Oh.
She has been in a hell of a lot of, and like all of the staples of the 90s, like Just Shoot Me, Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place, Gilmore,
oh my God.
Judging Amy, Dana and Greg, Ally McBeal, Felicity.
Oh, yeah.
She's done them all. Everybody Loves Raymond. Like, she is the quintessential one episode bit part actor. And it's
she must have a good agent.
She has 151 acting credits.
Wow. Those are good shows.
Also, one of my favorites is she was in Drunk History. Have you guys ever watched any of the Drunk History? Yes.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So, quite the actress is out.
Not too shabby.
Yes. Very, very.
What's her name again?
Nancy Lenihan.
Nancy. She does look like a Nancy in this episode.
She just looks like Nancy generally, actually.
She's such a Nancy.
So, yes, that is this week's Name That Minor Character, and I'm really sorry because she's the absolute worst, is our Pat, but...
As soon as she came out of the house, I'm like, okay, she's, like, breeding some Were Frankenstein stuff, like she's, you know, stitching together bits of werewolves to make a vampire, like she's up to no good.
She definitely about her. Yeah.
I don't know. Every time I watch this episode, I just hate her so much. I'm like, oh, she's got to be evil. And then you kind of remember, you're like, oh, she's actually just a sunshiny, annoying little lady.
Innocent bystander, yeah.
But, yeah.
Also, how typical that Joyce doesn't have any long-term friends but has, like, a new friend every week. Isn't that so Joyce?
I know. At the end of it, I was kind of like, oh, I'm so glad Pat died. I hated her. But I was like, oh. Joyce did finally have a friend. That's a little sad.
Yeah. it's the price we pay for not fleshed out characters in TV shows, you know.
That's it.
Never get any good friends. But Buffy heads inside and finds out that Willow stood her up without really even calling. Which, again, just so not Willow. Willow just would not do this to a person. She just wouldn't. She would have at least called and been like, sorry, I now can't make it.
Yeah. Also, like, in terms of, like, teenage schedules, like, what are the actual things that could have held her up, you know, bar an extreme emergency? Like, what's she going to be doing? What else is she doing? Homework.
Avoiding.
You know?
Avoiding.
Is she still teaching?
Maybe
lesson plans and stuff?
God, I hope not.
Holding out a full-time job while being a student?
Yeah, I mean, she did say she had a lot of life stuff going on. Maybe she, like, left that off the list.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh. So Buffy is informed by Joyce that she has invited the gang over to hang out the following evening, which Buffy looks super pumped about. And so she heads to the basement for the fancy plates.
The company plates.
Company.
Every time I watch this, I have this, I only think of, like, business branded plates, the company plates. I'm like, Joyce doesn't work for a company. What is this? Did they steal them from a bank freebie? Like, what are the company plates? And then it kind of explains itself.
It's like, as in, like, people coming over company.
Full company. Yeah. Yes. Very weird.
She goes looking for the fancy plates. She comes across a photo of the gang and gets all reminiscy, which is just like a weird...
Yeah. Also, what professional photographer took that photo? Ugh. Every TV show always has the professional photographer photos.
Yeah. Photos. And then she finds a dead cat. And can I just
say
that
cat is way grosser in HD than I watched the DVDs.
Yeah, you really can't see it very well on the DVDs.
Gross in HD.
Yeah.
It's also just super gross. Like, I understand it's there, it's in this episode here for, like, plot development. But you know, there's no spooky reason for them to have this gross dead cat behind a box in their basement. Like, that's just really gross. Why would how did that cat die there?
Yeah. Makes no sense. There it is not.
Yeah.
So they bury the cat. I didn't write them down, so I'm not going to quote them exactly, but I really like the words that Joyce says as she buries the cat.
It's a
little Fahrenheit.
I think I do remember them. But yeah, I love just the back and forth here because she, like, Buffy has a crappy, like, oh, what, thanks for stopping by and dying. But, like, Joyce is so good at like an impromptu eulogy. Like that's a skill. That's
yeah, it is.
It's very eloquent and profound. Like she's
it is, and just out of nowhere, she'd be real good at writing farewell cards and birthday cards.
Yeah, I was gonna say sticker would. And Hallmark. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, some people just have that natural ability.
I mean, I guess when you live in Sunnydale, you go to a lot of funerals, so it's easy to get good at the eulogy, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So it's the middle of the night and Joyce's Nigerian mask starts to get all glowy while they sleep.
Oh,
and then yeah, Pat is not the death anymore.
It, when the mask glows, it looks like the home base at like a laser tag place. You know how... when you're at laser tag and it's like, okay, that's home base. You get like 100 points for shooting home base. It looks like one of those things, you know?
Oh my God. Yeah. I totally see that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man. Oh no.
It's got very, like this episode, it's like also kind of like the mask, you know? Yes. Like we've got like the mask and then she puts it on and becomes like the mask.
Total mask vibe. Yeah.
Okay. It is insane you just brought that up. Because on my other podcast, the Cool Boys Recommends, this week I have to watch Son of Mask.
Oh my
that's
God.
Like that's like my recommend this week. And so yesterday, less than 24 hours ago, I watched Jim Carrey's The Mask in preparation for the shit sequel.
Oh, right.
And so I'm fresh. I'm real fresh on this.
Oh my God.
Yeah, big time.
Oh my God.
It's a weird movie.
I love it.
Yeah.
Crossover, the podcast meet in the middle.
Yeah.
Wait, so is Son of Mask that weird? Like, is it the baby that puts on the mask in that one? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like notoriously terrible. Like,
yeah, I don't think I watched
it. I've never seen it.
Weird.
I always thought that maybe it would work only because I really loved it when the dog put on the mask in the first one. So I thought it would.
Rewatching the first one, you realize how much it all relies on Jim Carrey. Like,
I would say so.
Yeah, and there's only really one person that's ever existed in the entire world that can actually play that character well at all.
Yeah,
and so doing it without him is kind of silly.
Yeah, that does make sense, actually. Like, he really is that character. Like, that is basically him.
It was written for him. So, like,
flashbacks to the scene where in the middle of the day in the therapy office, he puts the mask on his face and just like walks around the office being like, pretending that the mask is
a bag. Good scene, yeah.
So then we get the dream sequence with Angel.
Did you guys notice that the sprinklers on like the school lawn only wet the walkways?
No. Like, I didn't see that.
Like pointed directly onto the paths and you can't actually, so it wasn't barely watering the grass.
Random. Why would they do that? Real bad.
I don't know.
Right. Maybe that was another, like, this isn't reality. It's topsy-turvy dreamland.
Let's not give them that much credit. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So it just feels like, at least the last dream sequence was, it was kind of like Buffy was still recovering from the angel thing a little bit, and so you could understand her having a dream about him. But then B, it felt like there was some, like, prophetic stuff, you know? There was some moments of, like, things being said that were then brought up in the episode later.
Yeah.
It literally doesn't happen in this episode. This is the most pointless, unnecessary scene in the history of Buffy so far.
It's so, could not have put it better myself.
We've seen with David Boreanaz in it because he's in the credits. So let's...
There's that. I think there's also a little bit of padding this episode.
Yeah.
There's another scene we'll get to, which is kind of padded out for no real reason.
That's a good scene, actually. That's a good point.
That's totally what happened.
So they added on an extra 60 seconds here from the scene. Good.
Good. So, then we move on and it's morning and Joyce and Buffy are talking about the school options. And, oh, man, Joyce totally, like, mums it up in this scene. She's all like, made some bad choices. You might just have to live with some consequences. I love it.
I'm glad she said that though, because Buffy was being a little twit about it.
Yeah, she was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Ew, private school, no.
And
it's trying to help.
Private school now, it's going to be all girls. Like, seriously.
Oh, you're trying to segregate me from boys? Literally, you got expelled. Your mom's trying to get you into school again. Like, what do you want her to do?
Yeah.
But then she also calls Buffy a superhero, which is kind of sweet.
It's so weird, Joyce knowing about the Slayer stuff. I've never heard it before.
Yeah, it's weird.
Stay out of it.
It is weird, but I do like, I like her response being like, oh, like, can't you tell some people? Like, what about just the principal and the police? Like, you know, let's just tell some authority members. And it's kind of like, it's such a mum thing. Like, oh, let's, you know, you should get special credit because you're the slayer now. It's like an extracurricular activity. Yeah. Let's just let some people know.
It's not totally wrong.
Yeah, it's.
Maybe we should try it, you know?
Well, maybe. So they get distracted from their conversation by not so dead Kitty anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Racing inside. And Giles comes to take it away and comments on Joyce's Nigerian mask.
And Buffy quickly interrupts and is like, no, get back to research mode, Giles. Yeah. And we're like, no, but it's the mask.
And then we moved to the library, which Buffy was not allowed to come to because she's not allowed on school property. That would have hurt. And I kind of like this scene, this like Scooby gang hanging out in the library talking research and stuff scene. It feels like things are getting back to normal. You know, last week, I don't think we had a scene in the library last week that I can remember. I mean, Willow.
No, we did have, not, yeah, but not a full scene.
Not the proper kind of everybody sitting around researching and thinking about what's going wrong scene. And it was kind of nice. It felt like, you know, it felt like things were going back to normal. I liked it.
Yeah.
They discuss going over to Buffy's and what kind of get together they're going to have.
This conversation went for like 20 minutes. They just kept circling around. This is what I was talking about with the padding. This scene just kept going.
Yeah.
If you didn't have this scene, Chris, you wouldn't know what the difference is between a gathering, a shindig, and hootenanny.
Oh, my God. So dumb. That is dumb, kids. They don't know shit about anything.
This is totally the line that I swear all through high school, I was quoting this line. I would always talk about it. This is, I think still to this day, I always talk about hootenannies. And yes. I kind of forgot that it was from Buffy that I say this. But I'm always like, what's a gathering, a shindig, or a hootenanny?
Yeah.
Always say this. Absolutely. I always say this.
The line that I always used to quote as well. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's so funny. I didn't, yeah.
This scene, I always end up thinking about 10 Things I Hate About You, the movie, because Xander's all like, one vote for a smelly cheese night, and everyone else voting for a hootenanny. And it always reminds me of the scene in 10 Things I Hate About You where that guy's having a party where he's like got all the cheese and then everybody pops up and it turns into literally a hootenanny. So it's so weird. I always feel like one of them stole it from the other because it just is a weird kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Also, this is another perfect example of how everyone in this episode is not acting like themselves at all. They've been invited by Buffy's mother to a dinner party and they think it's appropriate. And Giles even is just like, yeah, okay, fine, you guys win. What? About throwing like a rager party at her house and bringing a live band and like a band in the living room. And and Joyce is like cool with this and it's...
That's literally my next point. Is Joyce just like totally chill with a party being thrown? She's just like... totally fine. Like,
I mean,
everything's fine.
It's so bizarre. Like, it doesn't make sense. My only explanation for Joyce's response is, you know, they're all just like walking on eggshells around Buffy. She's trying to just like let Buffy do her own thing. You know, she's not really getting angry at Buffy about anything at the moment. So,
also, Joyce is getting distracted by her stupid friend Pat.
Right. Who should be evil, right? Like, the schnapps should be poisoned with some kind of drug.
Yeah. Yes, they absolutely just should have had her play an evil character because she...
Maybe Pat was evil and Joyce was being drugged, but it just never came to anything because she died from the mask thing. But she was totally evil.
You should do the sub-comic on that. The like backstory of Pat was that she was actually planning something pretty horrific for Joyce.
But she'd spiked the empanadas, you know? Totally laced.
So then
I think my biggest gripe of the whole episode is how loud this band would have been at the party.
Oh my God, I know.
Like, you know when you have a drummer in your suburb.
Yeah.
You know. Let alone in your fucking living room.
Yeah.
It would have been, no one would have been able to speak in the entire house.
No.
Oh, totally. That's always like the convenient thing in movies and TV shows is when people are like having discussions in front of live music.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even if you're yelling, not possible.
Sorry, like for the rest of the band to be loud enough to be at the right level for that full drum kit that had no muting on it whatsoever, it would have been ridiculous in that lounge room. No one would have been able to hear. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, Willow certainly pretends not to hear Buffy, which is, again, super cold and not like Willow at all.
Yeah.
I think Willow just couldn't hear. I think she's the only one acting reasonable around this whole thing. You know, I obviously can't hear you. There's an entire band right there, Buffy. I'm not being rude. I can't hear you.
But so are we still in the library? Because we're getting to the point where Giles is flipping through the pages of the book and we get that annoying, we see the mask on the page and for some reason Giles is turning pages without reading them?
Yes, totally.
Who does that?
He's not on his game. He's not on his game.
I think that part, like, I think I was like yelling at the TV, like, why are you flipping pages without reading them, Giles? What are you doing?
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Yes. Speaking of the mask, it's getting all glowy again, and instead of waking up a dead cat, it's seriously escalated super fast and is now just waking up people. Why does this always happen, right? And I find this happens in Buffy a lot, where, like, the first night, does it need to, like, slowly gather power? Because, like, the first night it only manages to wake up a dead cat, but now it's, like, waking up humans all over Sunnydale.
You're so right. It's a great question.
I think it's like, okay, so here's my theory.
Here we go.
Give us a fair wait, Mabel.
Let me explain. Like, Marty Noxon and I worked on this, so let me just explain what we were talking about. Here's what I think happened. So it was clearly activated by someone, like, you know, putting it up on the wall. You know, Joyce had to, like, put it up, and that was, it became, like, actual.
So literally the act of nailing it to a wall. Not even nailing it. She hung it on a hook on a wall.
So hanging it for some reason is more, it's like, it's more of like a totem shrine thing now as opposed to sitting above. You know, it has been shrined now.
Sure.
And then I think it works on a like a radius level. So it got the cat first because that was in the vicinity of the house, and it's slowly increasing its, like, distance. Mm-hmm. So then by the next night, it's out to, like, a kilometre or two or three, and it's just, like, expanding its distance. In the first one, there was only one dead thing in the nearest vicinity, and that was the dead cat in the basement. The next night, it starts getting corpses from hospitals and graves.
Sure. And so it's dormant through the day then, obviously, and only comes out at night because scary things only come out at night.
Well, yeah, when its lights shine, I'm not really clear on that one.
So I can actually feel that one, Megan. Good. According to the mask, it's only activated at night because Loki, I think.
Oh my god,
you're right. Absolutely. So explained that. Thank you very much. Okay, good.
Good time, guys.
Excellent stuff, you guys.
Got to the bottom of that one.
That's brilliant.
Thank goodness you just recently watched The Mask so that we understand theory.
That's so convenient. That
was good prep work, Chris. On
that's your- right. All study.
So Buffy's talking to Xander and Cordy, right? At the party.
Oh, at the party. Ew.
So we're at the party. Willow's pretending not to hear Buffy. They have a little, like, everything's fine, and then Willow goes back to the party. And then Buffy is walking past Xander and Cordy making out, and Xander, like, calls out to her, despite the fact that he's midway through making out with Cordy. Yeah. And he starts trying to talk to Buffy, and Cordy is just, like,
kissing his neck.
While trying to have a conversation with Buffy, and the whole thing is just gross. That whole scene, gross.
Xander and Cordy are just gross. Everything about them is gross. But this scene, I think, is the most cringe moment in the whole episode, if not all of Xander and Cordelia. Like, I think
Buffy says it best. Well, I'll just be,
it's so gross. Like, yeah, you're right. It makes no sense for Xander to come out of the makeout session to, like, force her into that situation.
I know.
For Cordelia to then be licking his neck the whole time. Then Xander tries to get her involved in the conversation, and she's like, she's like, oh, wait, I was getting kind of turned on by your Nighthawk thing. Like, she just starts having more sexy talk in front of Buffy
I agree. But now I'm recalling teenage Megan.
Ew. Uh-oh. Gross teenage Uh-oh. Megan.
She was gross. She like made out with this guy on a bus. Whenever we went to like anything related to our choir, we were always on a bus late at night. And I like was gross with my boyfriend at the time. Like there was this poor girl in grade 8 who was sitting next to one of my friends having to ask questions like, why is she licking his chest? And sorry, no, Megan, inappropriate on a bus.
Oh, no.
Inappropriate behavior. So you know what? Teenagers. How gross. Some of them. Included.
Megan.
Oh, my God.
I don't want teenage Chris to be looped in on this. I think it's...
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, teenage Mabel is not a part of this.
It was teenage Megan. It was all teenage Megan.
I don't like anyone's chest. Well, it
was Cordy, and maybe some teenagers are just that gross. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, gross.
I am sorry.
I mean, I think it at least still... is consistent with the Xander and Cordelia storyline because they are just purely driven by horny hormones, you know, like horny teenage hormones is their entire relationship. So
yeah,
I guess they got to be pretty intense to make that work.
Ugh, let's move on. So the mask. Please. Okay. So the we're cutting back and forth in between scenes of the mask being evil, right? And watched this episode with me this morning, and it's so funny because right at this point when we cut back to the mask, he started imitating the noise of the mask. Because if you note, every single time the mask is on screen, it's like, whang, 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 whang. And so I'm just, like, sitting there typing away notes about Buffy, and Bugger, like, sitting next to me just starts going, whang, whang, whang.
I didn't notice that at all. That's hilarious.
I didn't notice it until he pointed it out, and then I couldn't.
Yeah, I didn't notice it.
Came on screen. So... Buffy decides to escape all the crap people at her party and then overhears Joyce having a little freak out in the kitchen, which is just one of those classic bad timing things, you know?
Yeah.
Heard the worst of what Joyce is feeling and thinking and, you know, it is a classic plot device, but it also is totally relatable that could definitely happen that way. But it tips her over.
Yeah.
She decides to head upstairs and start packing again.
Yeah. A bit much.
Yeah.
Look, I'm pretty much, like, I understand the kind of theme of the episode is, you know, like, everyone's hurting, everyone's had a hard time, no one's communicating about it, they need to have it out, whatever. I'm kind of on Buffy's side for pretty much, like, all of this, though, you know? I get that everyone had a shitty time when she went away, but I think as we discussed, like, if they were really being themselves, they would have been more supportive on her return. And, like, she had a shit time, you know? Sure, we acknowledge that Joyce didn't mean what she said, but Joyce did tell her to, like, not come back. She got expelled. She killed her boy. Like, she had huge trauma. She had to get away for a while. She comes back and is trying. Like, she's trying to, like, see her friends, talk to Willow. They're all avoiding her, all ignoring her, all kind of treating her like shit. Like, what more could she really do? Like, if they were to have it out, she hasn't even had a chance to talk to any of them.
No.
Like, she hasn't really done anything wrong, and they've all treated her like crap and get angry at her about it. Like, they're all now getting more angry at her.
They did ask her about her experience that first night, and she was like, I don't want to talk about it, to be fair. But she'd also just gotten home. Like, that was also not the environment to talk about it because everyone's there. At least have one-on-one with her before you decide
And in that scene, she's like, I don't want to talk about it, but in that same scene, she's like, does anyone want to hang out tomorrow?
Yeah.
You know, like, and they blow her up.
Yeah. Like, they don't even ask her why she left. They don't even have that conversation with her before they just decide that,
So I'm on Buffy's, like, because this just spirals and, you know, Joyce comes up, they get really mad, they go down, they have it all out, like, and they're all being super mean to her. Like, they're just, Xander keeps telling her off for, like, having, like, I hate it. They're all being super, super mean.
Yeah.
Valid points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Giles finally actually does proper research and figures out what the mask is, but
oh my God, yeah. In that scene, though, because you're in Giles' apartment. You see him in the book, and he's like, oh, Lord, and he's, like, just figured it out. But then he, like, moves with the book, puts it down, and flips more pages.
Okay, here's the explanation. Are you ready? Yeah, I also consulted heavily with Marty Noxon on this episode.
Wow.
So okay. What happened was that he opened that book to the content page and saw the name of the mask, and it triggered something in his mind where he was like, oh, my God, I have heard of this mask before, crap, and then puts the book down and flips to the page that that mask is actually on and then sees the picture and he's like, yep, same mask. That's what happened.
Okay. Big if true. Big if true.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Can't rule it out.
Story.
That's much better than how it comes across, which is him reading a book and being like, oh, I'm just two pages away from the answer now. Better get excited. Yep, there it is. Of course, in the form of a picture, as all Buffy clues are, because the writing does not get picked up by the camera.
Never.
No. There's a convenient picture that sums it all
very
up.
Good. Very good. So,
but I'm glad that we have that contents page storyline.
I know, thank lucky, you. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's what actually happened. So he can't warn anyone because of the stupid party.
Yeah.
This episode just fucking annoys me so much. It's just so far-fetched. Like, not even because of the zombies. It's just ridiculous that some random dude is going to answer the phone. Like, Joyce doesn't hear the phone ringing from the kitchen, which has a fucking phone in it, by the way.
Yeah, it'd be like,
the phone is ringing, and then it stops ringing, and so she doesn't just, like, pick it up to check that no rando has picked up her fucking phone, right? And this dude in the lounge room is just like, Bunny? What, Bunny? I hate this guy. He annoys the shit out of me. The whole thing is...
Yeah, but... Yeah.
I'm a pretty big fan of this guy. I'm not gonna lie. Pretty big fan.
I kind of like that the episode almost acknowledges his significance by giving him that first death, you know, when the zombies
come. Died way too soon. Died way too soon. This could be like a season 3 character. He kept popping up.
I'm so glad this guy's dead. He annoyed me so much. That was my words out of my mouth when that happened. No.
In Joyce's defense, Megan, before you get all in her case about not hearing the phone and answering and policing her partygoers, she's been having schnapps with Pat, okay? You know, she's on the schnapps. That's true. So give her a break.
Good point. So Willow uses this moment to finally talk to Buffy and acting.
Yeah, if Joyce hadn't interrupted, this might have gone kind of well. I think they were kind of actually getting to something.
And I love this from Willow. This, like, she for me really, really nicely sums up like friendship and relationships, right? Where she says, maybe I don't need to understand. Maybe I just need you to talk to me, you know? And because it's about the reaching out that's important, you know? And that, like, you know, I feel like I've had times in my life where I've really wore people off completely, and it does really push people away. Like, it's, you don't actually need them to understand what you're saying. You just need to actually take the step of saying to people, hey, my life sucks right now and I just want to talk about it, you know? Like, that is actually, that's what friendship is. It's about being vulnerable with people, you know? And I think that's a really nice little line from Willow that just kind of really sums that up for me.
Yeah.
Really quickly, I've made a note just down here on my page.
Yep. It
says, this DNM is going to hit Megan hard.
Oh, that's perfect.
I barely remember what was said, but I did make that note.
You're so good at calling it.
I identify with this moment.
What I also like about this DNM is what else Willow says, which is, you know, when she's talking about how she was having a hard time too, and Buffy's trying to acknowledge, like, oh, I know, like, it was hard on you, me leaving. And Willow's like, no, I mean, sure, that was hard, but, like, I also have stuff going on.
Yes.
And I think that was really important to highlight that it's, like, She not only wanted Willow to be a friend there for her, but, like, Buffy was supposed to be a friend to Willow as well.
Yeah.
Really glad that Willow wasn't just, like...
didn't let that slide and wasn't just like,
yeah,
I missed you. But no, actually, I missed you because I missed you as a friend, but I missed you as a friend.
Like, I needed you. I had
a bunch of other shit going on and I needed to talk to you about it. Yeah.
Yeah, like... sorry, Buffy, but, like, you're not the only one that is an angsty teenager right now.
Yeah. It's a real good scene. Totally hit me hard. Cut to Giles. Do you like my mask? Isn't it pretty? It raises the dead. Americans.
I love
Dawn
that.
Up the British. dialing it up. That's a nine. That's a nine.
Good stuff.
It's so good.
Yeah. Stupidly gets out of his car after hitting someone to get attacked by zombies.
I know.
Come on, Giles. There's zombies around. You know this. What the fuck?
I know. At least, like, I understand, like, if it is a person, it's very bad. But, like, be a little more cautious in checking, you know. Have a, like, look out the window first. See if you can see any signs of, you know, decay.
And then to look at his keys, I mean,
mate.
Yeah.
I do really appreciate the fact that he has to, like, Ripper his way out of the situation, though.
Oh, I know. I love the callback to Ripper. Yes. Does Chris remember Ripper?
He's a total badass. Do you remember
anything about Ripper?
I don't understand.
So Ripper is Giles's like young alter ego, who he was. Remember the character of Ethan, who was like, and you know, and
yeah, then, yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
See a bit of Ripper this
and
episode.
He's like, "Hello, Ripper," and then he's all like aggressive.
But what did he do?
He hotwires the car, and he's like riding a bicycle.
Yeah,
yeah, that was so weird, actually. Yeah.
Reminded that at some point in Giles' life he was literally a badass.
Yeah. Out of character again, I reckon. I know it's like kind of like a nod back, but like
no, Chris, it's not out of
character. No. Not at all. This is Ripper all the way.
This is Ripper. Ripper was
this is so weird. I feel like I'm not ready.
When we see him at the end with Principal Snyder as well, that's more Ripper. Like it's
All right. It also kind of felt weird to me, to be honest, but maybe there's something else that happens soon.
Ethan came into the show. And like
Halloween
and stuff, and like we find out that Giles used to do dark magic and raise demons and stuff.
Yeah.
Like beats Ethan to a
pulp. Yeah, I guess I don't know. He's changed. Yeah.
Look, I think Chris hasn't had the full exposure yet. I think you know. I'm sure a lot of like the Buffy fan base is over this, but I don't know about you, but I'm still pining for like the Ripper spin-off TV show.
Yeah.
You know, like I really want it.
Yeah.
I would totally watch that.
Yeah.
Please. I kind of would prefer I want a Ripper spin-off more than I want a Buffy reboot.
Ooh, interesting. I don't know if I do because I want Giles. I want Tony Head to play Giles, but equally like
he
couldn't do it for the spin-off.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty old now, right?
Early days.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
We'd have to get someone else.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So Joyce confronts Buffy while she's chatting with Willow. And so Buffy chooses to run back downstairs to the party, literally midway through this confrontation. Is that like her way of trying to stop it from happening or?
No. I like.
Crying and shit.
That's not weird. She's feeling literally overwhelmed by two people like attacking her, so she just needs to get away from them. But she's just walking away from them.
Rather than go back downstairs to the party?
Well, I think the downstairs to the party is more of like she was walking to the exit, maybe like trying to leave the house and then got like stuck in the party.
Yeah.
I really enjoy
the opportunity for Jonathan to have a little moment. The guy.
Yes.
It was a hell of a moment.
Hell of a moment. Oh. Welcome back, Jonathan. Season 3.
I love how even, like, the writers and the show, like, they just know, like, oh, we just need to stick Jonathan in somewhere. And it's so just like, what about you by the dip? And he's like, what? I'm just... And it's just this unnecessary cut to Jonathan. But we know we all love it. We know we can't get enough of Jonathan.
Yeah.
It's amazing you got invited to the party, to be honest.
Frankly, yeah. I don't know who invited him.
Yeah.
So then we basically just get a pile on Buffy scene where everybody piles on. It sucks.
I was cringing pretty hard.
Yep.
It is scene. Hard to watch.
It's hard to watch.
It's a lot.
It sucks.
It keeps going.
It just seems so unlike them to just be this mean to Buffy when she has clearly been going through something. Like she left the fucking town to get away from whatever she was going through. Clearly she was going through something and you're just all going to yell at her now? Like, that doesn't seem...
In front of everyone at this party?
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hootenanny, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Hootenanny.
I think the only... It's all cringe and horrible and painful to watch. I do like how we get out of it, though, with Willow's great sarcastic comment that leads into the next.
That leads into the yes. Violence. Cue the zombies.
I was being sarcastic. Thank you for cutting to what we want, Willow.
I also enjoyed Oz trying to referee the moment just prior to it turning into violence. That was a bit cute. That was very Oz.
I like that. Well, I like that the only way to go from Oz intervening was from like Willow to say something, then the fight to be over. Because can you imagine Oz actually having an argument with someone, or anyone having an argument with Oz?
No,
it wouldn't have worked. It was. You kind of watch him step in, and you're like, this doesn't make any sense. He can't argue with.
Cringing. I was still cringing the whole time. Cringe.
Yeah, I've written here. Good. A zombie killed that annoying guy who was on the phone to Giles earlier.
Okay. Just quickly. He's credited as Stoner Number One. Okay. So please use his name, please.
Stoner Number One.
Stoner Number One.
I do apologize.
Stoner Number One.
I should have made him this week's name, that minor character. I do apologize, Chris, for not giving him his day.
That's fine.
Nancy was a pretty good one. She had some impressive credits.
She was cool. She had to go with that.
Definitely up there. Yeah. Like, she'd be B grade for sure. Maybe even A. Yeah.
She has a first name. I mean, come on.
Yeah. She doesn't have a last name though, to be fair. So how did Buffy not immediately assume that these guys were zombies? I mean, they've already broken into the house. They're not vampires, and yet she stakes them thinking that they're vampires.
I mean, better safe than sorry. Even if they're not a vampire, maybe they still die from a stake to the heart. You know, it's just, why not try what you got? You don't know what you're dealing with. Stab it in the chest, see what happens.
Yeah, there's a lot of plot holes here. There's a lot of plot holes here,
including in quick succession. Including how thin that front door is when the zombies smash through it. Did you see? It's just like this tiny little thin piece of cardboard.
Yeah, and they barricade the door even though all the windows are already broken.
I know! Like, there's a huge gaping hole in the living room window. You assume zombies are flooding through it and we're just focused on the door. Because they couldn't think of a way to barricade the window. So they're like, that ship sailed as a rider.
Ridiculous.
We can't fix that anymore.
No. Also, I'm jumping ahead a bit, but while we're on plot holes, how does Buffy know not to look at the thing?
Well, because it flashed her in the eyes when she...
Yeah, she experienced it.
Yes. So when it went... So, yeah, let's do it. Let's head upstairs. Gang gets split up. They head upstairs. Bye-bye, Pat. Sorry to see you go.
See you, champ.
At least, and I've written here, at least lots of annoying people got to die this episode. So the zombie mom starts calling to dead Pat, and she puts the mask on. And then when she does that and looks at Buffy for the first time, the eyes like flash Buffy and confound her, and she gets knocked down. So she immediately knows not to look.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and that's why she then warns Willow. She's like, Willow, don't look at its eyes, but it's too late, Willow. It does it, but like, now she knows.
Yeah.
All right, that does make sense. Okay.
Yeah. It's a pretty, like, thinking of it now, it's a, as many issues with the plot as there are, it's a pretty good, like, demon strategy for it to raise the dead. The dead then kills more people, which then get raised, and it's all just to, like, get to the mouth. It's effective, and it works with Pat. It's a good strategy.
Yeah. So Giles tries to send Buffy a message on how to defeat the zombie when they end up outside.
Oh, yeah.
And she doesn't need it, though, because, yeah, she figured it out all on her own. And just smashes her in the eyes. Great scene.
With a shovel. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Then all of the zombies just disappear. Like,
they
fall down, no longer animated as dead bodies. They just disappear.
Yeah. Doesn't make sense.
No.
I think when I watched them all poof away, I was like, that's kind of convenient. It would be also convenient if all the damage done was also reversed. Like, that would be really nice. Whilst we're reversing things, why not, like, fix all the windows? That would be nice.
Like, yeah, let's pretend like it never happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the people that were killed. Pat and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just...
Weird.
They went to a party and ended up dead.
And then everything else, the destruction stays the same. Yeah. Just a real, like, real convenient plot device to make it so that they didn't have to bury a bunch of bodies.
Yeah.
But nothing like killing a demon to bring the gang all back together. Everybody's happy and lovely again. All very nice.
Yeah.
What is that, Mabel?
Oh, I mean, it's like the bulk of the episode, right? We've got this zombie storyline, but the bulk of it is like everyone's sad, everyone's getting over it. We have this big out fight at the party, and then at the end it's all together. And like, it again, just none of it none of it makes sense. None of it's in character. Like, the argument that they had it all out and didn't really resolve anything. But it, so I guess they all just need to yell at each other, or mainly they all just need to yell at Buffy for a second, and now they can forgive her. Which, again, I'm just kind of on Buffy's side for all this, because I feel like they all just yell at her, then decide to forgive her. Even at the end of the coffee shop, Willow's like taking the moral high ground. I'm just like, stop ragging on Buffy.
Yeah,
like, you fucking assholes.
I do like Willow, like, kind of, she's really getting her confidence in season three, though. Like, you know,
learning spells.
It's, you know, it's a cute enough little.
It is cute.
But
yeah, as much as I don't approve of her, like, taking the moral high ground stance, I do like them getting back to this, like, friendship banter. Like, that's cute. Yeah. Good for them.
But just before that final scene, we have a great scene where Giles visit to Snyder and full rippers him, and it is amazing.
Yeah.
Would you like?
Help, yeah.
It's good stuff.
Mm. Not only a great opportunity for, a great opportunity for some ripper action, but also a very convenient way to get Buffy back into school.
Yeah.
I was just counting up all of the bodies that are seen in this episode. It's so many. It's actually too many to count. It is over 20, probably.
Really?
Of the death count this time. So, a vampire abducted by Buffy very early on. Mm-hmm. Hatches, the dead cat, a group of citizens that become zombies. So there's the unidentified man killed in a car accident, unidentified man dying of extensive burns, unidentified doctor killed by the zombie, unidentified nurse killed by a zombie, unidentified young man neck snapped by a zombie. That's your mate.
Stoner number one,
yep.
Pat killed by a zombie, and then Obu Mobani, which is the demon that Pat becomes, killed with a shovel. And then all of the zombies automatically destroyed by Obu Mobani. It's
so many.
Yeah.
That's a heaps.
That's heaps.
Do they say the masked demon's name in the episode?
Yes, they do. Yes, Giles calls Obu Mobani. Yes.
Right.
Okay. So he does the whole, like, when he arrives at Buffy's house, he kind of has this whole moment of, like, explaining it to Cordy. So, yes, he kind of does the whole, you know, explanation thing. This is the character and this is the demon and this is how we have to kill it, blah blah blah. So
cool. Yeah. Okay. That's death count was in the 20s.
I reckon
20 plus.
Yeah. Cool. 20 plus.
Yeah. Yeah. So, favorite quote.
Party Villa, can I rock you?
Ah! No. So good. And I know we were all avoiding referring to it because it's the fucking best line.
I was not avoiding referring to that line at all.
He's on fire, that guy. He's so funny. Anyway, that's mine.
The delivery of that line, man.
And every other line, he's so good.
I mean, I think that was my. I'm sure I can choose another one, but that one stood out to me.
Was that yours as well?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I can't. I think that guy won.
I think is my brother. That was definitely, like, going through it, there were a lot of lines I loved, but when he said that, fucking loved it. Loved it.
Yep.
But I'm going to go with a runner-up just because there are some other lines. I really liked when Joyce, after seeing Principal Snyder for the first time, calls him, like, a nasty little horrid bigoted rodent man.
Nice.
That made me really happy.
Yeah. Great. I mean, that's a great,
very appropriate,
frankly.
Yeah. Nasty little horrid bigoted rodent man. Coming from Joyce as well. It was very satisfying to
hear. It's very good.
Okay.
I'm going to go with none of the ones that I've already said, because why would I? All of those are great. I'm going to choose, Cordy, get out of my shoes.
Oh, yeah. With tears in her eyes, get out of my shoes.
Oh, I love it. I'm Buffy. I'm, you know, all of the really bad things that Buffy.
I'm a freak. So, of course, I would get a freak boyfriend and then...
Yeah. Get out of my shoes.
Yeah.
That's mine. Favorite moment.
No prizes thing. For guessing. No prizes for guessing what won the episode for me. Stoner number one, baby. MVP. Stoner number one. He was so good. He's the best. He's so good.
Mabel.
Yeah, I've just picked my thing that wins it at the end. And I was gonna go for a scene and then I realized what it is. Giles wins it for me for this episode. He was the only thing that I thoroughly enjoyed. All his scenes were great. All his, like, Giles wins it for me.
Excellent choice. That is a really good choice. I would choose that if I hadn't already chose this one, which I did choose only just like as we were talking about it, but it's that scene between Buffy and Willow. You know,
there
I like
there you go. Lovely.
Yeah.
Chris, tell us where we can find you.
Poor Boys Recommends. It's my other podcast done with Davey, a friend of the show who's been on this this podcast a couple times. Me, Davey, and Stu, the three of us get together and recommend different things for each other to do. Go check it out. It's good fun.
I'm not even going to bother Mabel, and I'm just going to tell people where to find us.
Buffy Strayer.
So we are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram. And you can send us an email, buffystraya@gmail.com. We are going to do a special episode because we discovered that we're shit. And a bunch of people have been sending us emails and messages, and we have not responded to them. We've ignored them because we forgot to even log into the Gmail account for a very long time. So we're going to do a special episode coming up very soon.
We suck.
So we're going to give our fans a special shout out in a special episode.
I love our fans so much.
I love our fans too.
I feel like trash.
Me too. I feel like the worst kind of person. Yeah.
Yeah.
We love you guys.
Bye.
Right, should we do this thing?
Yeah.
One moment. Sorry.
Okay, one moment. Chris is like, I have to madly read back over my notes because it was 2 weeks ago and I have no fucking clue what this episode was about.
No, I skimmed it yesterday, so I have a bit of an idea. But
okay.
Yeah.